Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Petrified Podcast. I'm your host, Damon Martinez, here with my co-host,
Eric Lover.
And we just came from the theater straight to the studio. We just watched the brand new Nosferatu, directed by Robert Eggers. And wow, just amazing, man. It was a good movie. So if you haven't seen it yet, go check it out because there's going to be spoilers in this episode.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, you might want to hold off on listening to the review because there's definitely going to be some spoilers thrown in
there.
There's
some spoilers.
Fair warning.
But without spoilers, this movie, it's an amazing vampire movie. Good suspense. Good, just the horror aspect of it. The atmosphere in the movie is just, it's dark. It's gray. It's wet. Just like,
oh yeah. The cinematography in this film was hands down probably
amazing.
One of the best movies I've seen this year as far as that aspect.
Yeah.
Just
the writing in this was done amazing. I mean, it just, the story was really, really good. If you love vampire movies, this is for you. And if you just love Robert Eggers stuff, you know, like The Witch and The Northmen and stuff like that, I mean, you're going to love this movie. But with spoilers, we get into you open up with her having a nightmare of Count Orlok, pretty much. I guess you would say torturing, in a way.
Yeah, it appears to be so. I mean, it's kind of like obviously got that sexual underlying where
there's a lot of, like that.
There's a lot of insinuated sexuality throughout the film.
When I went to go watch, because I watched it a different time than you, I watched it a little bit like 2 hours later. We did have a people walk out of the theater. There's a scene in there where, Thomas is sent, obviously, if you watch the original Nosferatu, he goes to make a deal with Count Orlok to get this estate pretty much in Germany. And in the original one, he goes to this village and there's kind of like, hey, don't go there because
It's kind of an American Werewolf in London type situation. Yeah. You know, you're at, you know, the slaughtered lamb and there's this uneasiness.
Yeah.
Well, Eggers took it to a great point. I really like the fact that, you know, culturally, he really, and you know, this is a movie, so basically,
and it's set in 1823.
I think it's 1834
or 1834.
So, anyways, it's an early, you know, early 19th century.
Yeah,
and so essentially, how it works out is, you know, this is a movie, and it does say this, so we're not, you know, we're not being discriminatory.
Yeah.
He goes into a village and there is a band of gypsies in the village. And what they got offended of were the gypsies were actually, in their superstition, they were making a sacrifice unto Count Orlok.
Yeah, so to keep, you know, him from killing the village.
They're making, you know, they're making an amends. So they're sending a virgin atop a white steed into, you know, basically into the forest where Count Orlok will eventually, and you know, it was kind of cool how they did it. It was, like I said, everything in this movie, like visually, it was just stunning.
Oh yeah.
So we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. We're, you know.
Oh yeah.
But you know, the people walked out because there was
it was an unclothed female. Yeah, but it wasn't like distasteful. It was just kind of reflecting what, you know, the ritual that they were doing for, you know, to keep the village safe.
Yeah.
And kind of hunting his grave, pretty much, because they were looking for his grave and trying to kill him. Don't know if it was like an actual dream or if he actually saw it, because he did have, you know, mud on his feet, but when he woke up the next morning, but it's insinuated that it was like a dream, but you know,
there's lots of things in this film that are insinuated that they're a dream, but they aren't really a dream. Yeah.
Yeah. So, pretty much the cast in this movie, we have Lily Rose Depp, which is Johnny Depp's daughter. She plays Ellen Hutter. Then you have Nicholas Holt, who, if you don't know, he played Renfield in obviously Nicholas Cage's adaptation of Dracula, about Renfield, who is familiar. He plays Thomas Hutter. And then you have Bill Skarsgård as Count Orlok, and
you will never recognize him.
The way they portrayed him was, amazing.
You would have thought it was like a much older, like Eastern European man, with just the way that it kind of comes off.
And yeah, dude. Just his voice. Of course, the accent. Of course, it has to be the Transylvanian, accent that they had, but. Even just that way his voice sounded, I don't know if they did like an overdub or if it was actually
was kind of overdub, because it kind of like, I don't know. The first thing I thought of when I heard his voice, and this is no diss, but it's one of the things that it kind of like, I think a lot of people came by, but it kind of gets that whole like Davy Jones.
Yeah.
Got the Davy Jones, Curse of the Black Pearl kind of thing going on a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was another thing that kind of threw me off, that, with this adaptation, is that it's in Germany.
Yeah.
The, obviously the Coppola version, where it was a little bit more English.
Yeah.
And
Nosferatu, the original one, was an adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula. And to not copy it fully, it had to be set, Dracula set in London.
Yeah.
The Nosferatu set in Germany.
But they kept the English accents.
Which
I kind of felt like a little off-put, because in like a lot of the, like even with the gypsies, it was a very Eastern European, almost like guttural German accent that they were kind of speaking in, and Romanian.
Yeah, Romanian,
and
yeah.
It was coming out fluid. And then it's like, well, bloody well, chap. And you're just like, what is this? It's like...
that's the only thing. I think if they would have used... Even if they spoke in English, but had like some kind of German accent behind it,
it
would have at least helped.
Yeah, because first of all, you have to like take the you have to set yourself up mentally for the fact that even though they're in Germany, they're speaking English.
Yes.
So that was the first, obviously language barrier that I had to jump over. Then it went to the fact of, hey, they're in Germany and they're speaking English, but they're speaking the Queen's English.
Yes.
And it's like, okay.
Yeah,
that's the one thing that I can kind of say where they kind of lost me. Visually, like
it's still kind of that aspect though. It's like with 300, obviously the Spartans didn't speak English or the Queen's English. They just they spoke in their language, but they did that with 300. You give them an English accent, they sound more sophisticated. They sound more intellectual. Same thing with Gladiator, So, the movies still do that to this day. You can tell, what he's influenced by, cinema-wise. His whole portrayal of Count Orlok was just done. I mean...
The villains in this movie,
amazingly.
Hands down, even in Renfield, I think, even though it was more comedic than actual, it was horror comedy... Even the way that was addressed, as far as it being called Renfield, which is kind of like, this is kind of like the sidekick. This is the apprentice.
Yeah.
The way that they brought off, which it isn't Renfield in this movie.
Knock, who plays, who is his boss at first.
Yeah.
He was played by Simon McBurney. He plays Knock, which is one of his bosses from the real estate firm that he works at.
His portrayal, amazing. Yeah. His portrayal was hands down one of the best of the entire movie. I mean, they make him appear as he really was, like just very, very evil and under the control of Orlok.
Yeah,
and he's using pretty much he's using the newly married Hutter, obviously Thomas, to go off abroad to, go through and get this paperwork signed so that he can take him away from Ellen.
Yeah.
So that Ellen is now unprotected. Even, the new bride has found herself, alone. And
yeah, she's vulnerable now.
She's absolutely vulnerable, and Orlok can go in and have his way.
Yeah.
I just really like the way that they gave him more of a backstory.
Yeah. He didn't just go mad because Count Orlok, you know.
Yeah, he's not
he
just
was,
like
he was mad. He yeah. was already under his control, but now he's that, you know, it's getting closer to Count Orlok coming in to the city or to the town. Now he starts turning. He starts breaking down more. So yeah, you have him. You have Aaron Taylor Johnson playing Friedrich Harding. He's the friend of Ellen, her husband.
Of Thomas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Thomas's closest friend, yes.
Yeah. And then you have, of course, Willem Dafoe is also in this. He plays Professor Albin. Oh, man. even harder. He plays a professor, pretty much the one that goes mad. Or that was kicked out of kind of like the scientific community because of his... Because
he turned his back on science.
Yeah.
He went into alchemy more and obviously... And
his fascination with the occult and, yeah, studying the occult more.
The dark arts.
Yeah. And then you have Ralph Ineson, who plays Dr. Wilhelm Sievers, I believe is how you pronounce it. And he's like the one who attends to Ellen, you know, after she goes, is having her spells and, you know, stuff like that. And yeah, so he gets sent to, it's a promotion. He's, you know, he's going to get more money.
He's got to seal the deal. This is his future handed to him on a platter. Is essentially what it comes down to.
Well, it's just bait. Yeah. It's
yeah. So they hand Thomas this bill of goods that basically you have to go and pretty much you have to go get the title paperwork signed. What would be the equivalent of today's title paperwork? So here's your satchel. And you're thinking, you know, it's going to be like the other films where obviously, you know, he gets on a steamer ship or, you know, he just kind of mystically appears at, you know, he's just somehow at the foothills of the Carpathian mountain range. But no, he literally hops on a horse.
Yeah. And takes off.
He tells his best friend, hey, listen, you know, can you look after my wife?
Yeah.
I, you know, in order to get what I want in my life, you've already built your career. You have your, you know, your shipping career.
Yeah.
But I have to establish myself as, you know, the breadwinner. So I must go forward and make this happen so my wife and I have a future.
Yeah.
So he hops on his lone steed and he rides off into basically the forest. And he's riding through the countryside at first. And then about 2 minutes in, obviously there's a progression of time. He's walking a horse and he's on like this cliffside looking down at this little village.
Yeah.
And this is that little village we spoke of earlier with the inn that's at the base of the Carpathians. And he goes down to the village and it's just basically a whole party of gypsies.
Yeah.
And they're
playing music.
Music. Reveling,
yeah, just... they're trying to get money. I mean, yeah. From what it looks like, it's like a street performer, you know, you're trying to make money, you know, any way you can with your talents or whatever. So yeah, he's trying to get a place to stay for the night.
So he walks up to the door and pretty much he's kind of announced that he is there. And the one word that you can understand in what he's actually saying, because he speaks the dialect, is Orlok. And the minute that he says that, the innkeeper's like, I want no part of this.
Yeah, like, don't speak his name. Yeah, like, don't talk about it. Yeah.
Like, you're bringing a hex upon us by saying this name.
Just go back home, cut your losses. Yeah. Like, you don't need to do that.
And everybody's telling him through the whole movie, okay? Like, his wife is...
She had the nightmare about him dying.
Yeah, she's almost, like, clairvoyant. She has gifts. And she's telling him, please don't go, please don't go, please don't go. Yet he's still, you know, I gotta be the breadwinner, I gotta grind, man. Yeah, I gotta get my business handled. So he takes off.
And then they tell him.
The innkeeper's like, I'm not gonna give you a room.
Yeah.
So he's got to pony up two times the rate. So he basically extorts the guy. Says, hey, I've got money. I will buy the room. So finally the innkeeper, I guess, is, you know, they never really have another circumstance where they meet. He's just like, yeah, go ahead and go in.
Yeah, and then the woman, the older woman that shows him to where he was going to sleep, she tells him, you know, that, hey, just you don't need to go. You need to pray and pray and pray because, you know, he will get you. And she hands him a wooden cross. And at night, that's when he sees the...
He's wakened by a commotion outside of his window. Yeah. And he goes outside and there's...
It's
like a caravan.
Yeah, they're going around, and they have, of course, the, I guess, assuming a virgin woman naked on a white horse, and they're pretty much either offering her up to Count Orlok so that way he does not kill the village, or they're trying to lure him so they can kill him, because they were looking for his grave.
I think that's what they were doing. I think that was looking like an offering, I think what they were doing was trying to extract them out, trying to get them to come out of hiding.
Yeah.
Because they walk to where there's this
cemetery or burial ground, at least.
It's like a burial ground. It's like a rune on top of a stick.
Yeah.
At the end of this pathway.
Yeah.
And there's a box at the end of it. It's a sarcophagus. It's just sitting there.
Yeah.
And one of the men stops the horse and goes forward. He seemed like the leader of the group. And he pops the sarcophagus open and goes through and sinks a spike through the heart of a vampire, for lack of a better, and it starts bleeding and spewing out and everything. Yeah. And of course, Thomas, you know, this being all, you know, new to him and just completely appalling, he fades out and he's thinking, he's proposed that he had a nightmare.
Yeah.
He's laying in bed the next morning. He's like, woo, thank goodness, you know.
Yeah.
That was just a that dream.
Yeah.
And then they...
No more sugar before bed.
Yeah. Like a Christmas carol. It's a potato or whatever the hell he's got going on. But yeah, his shoes are covered in mud.
Yeah, so he was outside.
Which tells you that, yeah, that really went down.
Yeah. And so he finally... he goes out and there's nobody else in the village. Nobody's there.
The whole camp's been abandoned. And, of course, they've taken his horse.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, they took his horse. So he has to trek on foot now. He has to just go through the mountains and make his way to the castle. And he comes to a crossroads in the woods. And that's when he finally sees the carriage coming to pick him up, driven by black horses. There's nobody driving it. And... at least, like, not the original one where it was, like, a bat, like, flying above it, like, leading it.
There's always bats, wolves. I mean, always tons of great imagery in these movies.
Yeah. So he gets into the, which, I don't know why. He even at this moment, with nobody driving the carriage, and the door opening by itself to let him in, he's like, all right, this is it. Yeah, this is how I gotta make my money. Like... this mysterious carriage, like, that he doesn't even know is going to, but I feel like that Orlok pretty much has.
I think his shadow stretches over that, you know, that area. That's where his family has reigned for centuries.
Yeah. So he's already like under some sort of kind of spell. And so he goes back to the castle, and the castle, I mean, it looks amazing. I don't know if it's like.
No, the funny part about the castle is actually, this is real facts, it is Hunandon Castle, and Vlad Tepish actually was kept as a prisoner in that castle when Vlad Tepish was alive.
Oh.
He was imprisoned within the castle walls. Yeah. So, once again, just a simple fact that Eggers, in his storytelling, whether it's The Northman or The Lighthouse or any of these great films that he's done.
Yeah.
Culturally, he keeps it completely accurate. There's, I mean, for that.
That's
to be like
pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that you get brownie points for that in my book.
Yeah.
So.
Probably one of the inspirations for kind of the original vampires, you know, that's pretty cool. I didn't look up that. That's pretty badass.
So he gets to Orlok's castle. And of course, Orlok is. At first, he's the shadowy figure. He's just the back turned to you. You don't really get a good look at the imagery. So he ushers him in, and Orlok seems perturbed because of the late hour he come calling.
Yeah.
He's like, it's past midnight. And here you are at the house. All the servants have left, but there's some food on the table.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course... you know, Thomas thinking, well, you know, are we going to do this tonight? Like, you know, I just got here. Like, aren't don't you want to wait till the morning?
He's and like, no, he go, I want you
Orlok's to. Orlok's like, yeah, no, I like, this is what we're going to do. Like, I want the paperwork. I want to see, you know, I want to hurry this along.
Yeah.
So, of course, Thomas has, you know, questions that he wants to ask Orlok about
the customs of the village people.
Village people, yeah.
You know, why they were doing what they're doing. But he, Orlok says that it's, you know.
It's just superstition.
It's superstition. That's their weird savage customs. Like, that's why he was so excited to, you know, move to where they were. So that way he doesn't have to deal with that anymore. But what I liked about it is you never really see in the beginning when you first when Thomas first encounters Orlok is you never see his face. You see bits and parts of him. Obviously you see his hands, a silhouette of his face, but you don't see actual detailed features because it keeps it a mystery. You know, because I think people are so used to seeing the traditional Nosferatu, the Count Orlok that, you know, everybody sees, you know, you've seen him in SpongeBob, you know, you've seen obviously the old original ones. So I think keeping that a mystery was done really, really well until finally revealing how he looks, and he just looks, pretty, pretty wild. But yeah, he keeps pushing Thomas to he wants to sign these papers. He wants to get it done. Gives him a drink, you know, all that. And you could tell finally that, you know, he's under some kind of spell. And he tells him to eat, you know, because they have bread on the table. And so he cuts the bread. Weirdly, he cuts the bread like in a...
Yeah, with a knife towards himself, like yeah, towards the interior. I'm not gonna lie. I do that with bagels sometimes. I cut towards the palm. I ran a bagel shop. That's the saddest part about life. Is like I still do that. I know I've seen people cut themselves, but I still do that.
Yeah.
And so you know he cuts himself, and it wasn't like the Coppola one where he like grabs the razor and like licks it.
Yeah.
No, you just see like, and that's another great focal point is you haven't seen Orlok's full silhouette yet. You haven't seen his full face, but his eyes just burn when that blood like hits the blade.
Yeah.
And he's on point, but he reserves himself. He holds himself back and he's like, no.
He just tells him, careful with yourself.
Yeah, yeah, careful, careful. And so as he eats, Orlok is going over the documentation. He's going over the paperwork. And he's, you know, as he goes through, he's sitting there and Thomas is eating and he's taking place. And then he has him go to sit by the fire. He tells him to go sit by the fire. So Thomas goes towards the fire and he sits down. And then as far as at first he was on the front side, kind of on the right, but then Orlok appears behind him.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's when Thomas really realizes, I'm hammered on this one.
Yeah.
Like, it's over. So then he passes out and he wakes up. And
he's all on the floor.
He wakes up and he's, like, by the fireplace. And it's the next day. And it's morning, of course. So he goes and he's looking around and he's trying to find where exactly Orlok's at.
Yeah.
Because he's all alone in this giant castle. And really, technically, so for this dining room, he hasn't been introduced to anything. So he goes to find Orlok, and there's multiple different doors, and they all appear to be locked.
Yeah.
So he finds this one door, and it's locked, and he kind of kicks his way in.
Yeah, he breaks it with a rock, because he's trying to leave, because he's sick.
Yeah.
And I believe this was the night before. So he stays there the night, he signs the paper, then he gets, you know, under a trance. And then finally he's like, I think he was sick, and he was trying to tell Count Orlok that he wants to
leave. He's having this horrible nightmare.
Yeah, that he's getting sick, he's having nightmares ever since he got there, and he wants to leave. And Count Orlok said, no, you need to rest. Like, you need to just rest, and then you cannot, it's bad luck to depart when you're sick.
Yeah, with these strange, weird superstitions.
Yeah, so, and he tells him that, and he's like, no, I object, like, I want to leave. And Orlok said, no, he just keeps walking away. And mind you, we're talking about Orlok, like, he's talking, like, he has this deep, like, thunderous voice that, like, well, I wouldn't say thunderous, I like, kind of like a, it's like a, like an...
Very Rasputin-ish. It's like a deep Slavic, like...
It's like really, really, really like rough. It's
like Dinner with Rammstein. It's like... Yeah, deep, deep Eastern European, like... I believe he's speaking either Romanian or I would assume it's Romanian or Russian, but it's a very deep accent, yeah. Whatever it is.
And yeah, and like I said, I don't know if it's actual scars. I think it is, but it could be overdubbed and having this deeper voice kind of being portrayed. But if it's him, man, this is an amazing performance. One, you can't tell it's him, and it doesn't even sound like him. He could just be using, you know, being the body, you know, and
I don't know. Else. I can't really see it being presented like that. I really tend to believe that probably it was him actually speaking.
Yeah, because it's done really like you really it does not sound like him. It's he did an amazing performance. So yeah, he walks off and he tells him, no, you're gonna stay. But you know, he has these. Thomas has those puncture wounds on his chest.
He has bite marks
over his heart, and you know he's worried. And then the next night, when he wakes up the next day, he's like, he just wants to leave. So he leaves in the morning, and that's when he breaks into Orlok's chambers and
sees the sarcophagus.
Yeah, and he opens it up and finds him there, fully nude.
Yeah. You do see silhouette silhouette Orlok penis.
Yeah, dude. Even that in itself, like it would have kind of like thrown it off. It would just been like bare, like some of the old vampire movies where it's just like smooth,
like a Ken doll.
Yeah, pretty much. So that I get that. I get why they did that. But yeah, and then he finds him there laying in his sarcophagus and
he pretty much knows what's going on at that point. He's like, oh my gosh, like everything is starting to fall into place. He's you know, he's understanding why the contract was written in basically in Hungarian.
Yeah.
Because he said that the contract had to be written in the ways of the old world or something like that. And yeah. So you realize that, you know, he's like putting two and two together and saying, hey, I need to get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah.
So now Orlok like literally is laying there. So he sees his moment. He's freaking and there's a pickaxe.
Yeah.
In the room. So he picks up the pickaxe and goes to go at Orlok with a pickaxe. And the one crustaceous hand reaches out and grabs it. And then Orlok just dead stands up and screams. And that's when you get the full image of what Orlok really is. Because he's completely unclothed. There's no cloak. There's no cape.
He has a stash.
There's no pantalones.
And he has a mustache.
Yeah.
Like he has a full on thick like
handlebar mustache.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which I thought was a good choice. I like that because I think the way of thinking is like you don't want to portray it like the original or the Willem Dafoe one because of the teeth. Obviously, they're even though they're accurate bat teeth, it is very comical. Like it's just silly because it looks silly.
Yeah.
So how do you make sure that you can portray this character as the horror icon that it is? Without, you know, having those teeth that make it fall apart immediately. And so I think the mustache was a good answer. Not only that, you look like the people of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. The region.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you have that big, heavy Russian mustache.
Yeah. And so he looks just like those people, you know, with that thick mustache that, you know, drapes over the lips. And, you know, you can't tell if he's talking or not. And I think that's pretty much what it is. You hide the teeth and you won't have to portray them and ruin this character. So I thought it was a good touch. I thought it was a nice little touch, you know. It adds accuracy and it helps, you know, keep the character, you know.
In character.
Yeah. You know, not talking in this deep voice and then he comes to light and he has those two little teeth. He's got
some Tic Tacs.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, so the chase scene through the castle was really good because he gets chased by the dogs, by Nosferatu's...
The three hellhounds.
Yeah, his hellhounds, and he comes through, and his shadow, after he barricades himself behind a door to keep himself from getting eaten by the dogs, he opens the door. He makes him open the door. Orlok makes Thomas open the door, and that's when you see like the silhouette that you see in the trailers where he's standing there with his, you know, his garb on and he got the dogs beside him. That was, yeah, that's,
it
that's,
was a good shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, so the dogs run into the room after him because yeah. Orlok obviously through mind control has made him open the door and submit to him. So he does so and Jonathan makes a bolt for the window and the dogs run in and he jumps out of the window into the water below.
Yeah. And that's his end so far for this
yeah.
story. Of course, back at home, Ellen is having all these night terrors. She's, you know, he is has this curse over her and is pretty much torturing her mind, telling her that, you know, she's going to be his. Like, she belongs to him. She doesn't long for this human world. She belongs to him, and she's supposed to be with him, and he's going to come for her. And so they're trying to figure out medically, like, what's going on with her. Like, she keeps, like, freaking out, and the doctor keeps giving her ether to make her go to sleep.
Yeah, he keeps spacing her out and whacking her out, yeah, and...
He keeps doping her up to keep her under. And finally, they're like, well, we don't know what it is. Like, she's, you know, she keeps having these terrors. She keeps talking about, you know, some kind of darkness coming. And the doctor's finally like, well, he goes, I've done all I can, you know, with my ether and everything else.
I've tried all.
He goes, have you tried tying her to the bed?
And yeah. So they're basically, they're making her sleep in a corset.
For blood flow.
Yeah, to basically because it's an issue of blood somehow.
Yeah, which does make sense.
Her eyes are dilated, yeah. And yeah, she's having wild fantasies of yes. something coming for her. It must be the blood.
Yeah, so they put a tight-ass corset on her.
Yeah, like you do.
And they tie her to the bed, and it doesn't make sense. So the doctor's like, well, I have a, you know, one of my professors from when I first started, you know, this... studying medicine, I think we should talk to him. The only thing is, like, he was kind of had his back turned, you know, from the scientific community and the medical community because he started getting into
alchemy
and the occult, and he became obsessed with it, and they say it made him mad. So they go to find him, and he's in his dwelling, pretty much.
Enter William Dafoe.
And that's William Dafoe.
Who lives at my house, because obviously there were at least five cats
in there. Oh, yeah, he has a lot of cats.
He has, like, five cats, like some other people we know. And, yeah, plenty of books and five cats, so.
Yeah, he, so he's, like, in this kind of trance state, I guess you could say, and I believe he's speaking Latin, if I'm correct. Could be wrong. So the doctor, they ask him, hey, like, you know, we're here. We don't mean to disturb you. And he's just kind of...
He won't snap out of it. Yeah. He's in it. So he's just sitting there and he keeps repeating this same, like, mantra. He's just, like, saying it over and over again. And finally, the doctor leans in and speaks a phrase in Latin, and William Dafoe... Yeah. Basically answers said phrase, and he snaps out of the trance.
And he recognizes him as, oh, you know, my...
Yeah, he knows exactly who he is and what he's doing there.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, yes, the young woman. And it's like, wow.
Yeah, so, and that's the thing is, like, the husband... Not the husband, but the
his Ellen, husband's friend, yeah.
Yeah, Ellen staying with friends, and the husband who, you know, is trying to help Ellen out, he doesn't believe in, like, all that, like, the superstition.
Yeah, he's a super skeptic, yeah.
But this dude that you've never met before, that you never came into contact with, knows what's going on without even being there. And you don't find that, like, okay, maybe this dude does know what he's talking about.
But his wife was also, for him being a skeptic, his wife was extremely spiritual. She keeps turning everything to God, and kind of as she's trying to help Ellen, she keeps referencing that, you know, we pray... And this, so there is a form of belief somewhere in the family. It just skipped him completely.
Yeah, so. He does not believe. He's more of a logic and
science. And what I can touch, what's tangible.
Yeah. So they go to check on her, and she's just spazzing out. She's having seizures, and when he walks in, he's like, you know, untie her. Like, why is she tied down? And
yeah, why is she tied to the bed?
Yeah, so he, not really like an exorcist, but he pretty much tries to get out what's going on with her. Like, he wants to know. So he does this little ritual, like, demonstration to show that it's more than just, you know, something natural.
Yeah, it's not an issue of blood. It definitely is something more.
Yeah.
So
that's when, you know, she tells them, like, you know, people are going to die. You know, you're going to have to bury your dead, this and that, right? And so he finally, like, realizes, like, oh, this is a vampire. Like, we have, you know.
And I forget the name that they use. The spirit within her identified as someone else. It started with an E. And then through that, he basically goes further into it, that it's almost like a tribe almost, but that particular demon in said legion or something is Nosferatu.
Nosferatu, yeah. The bringer of death.
Yes.
Yeah. And so he, you know, now they got to find out how to, you know, one, keep him from controlling her, and try to how to destroy him. Of course, the dude, the guy that she's staying with is like, no, like, this is ridiculous. Like, she is just, there's nothing wrong with her. Like, she's fine.
Yeah, she's had these fits since she was a kid.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, it's just her mental illness progressing.
Yeah. But back to Thomas. Now he gets found on the edge of a river bank and
by a nun, like y'all do.
I mean, so
nuns are always out collecting black bushels, looking like the Led Zeppelin 4 album cover. Just saying.
Yeah, she has a bundle
once again of
wood that
visually
she's
stunning. But yes,
visually stunning. Yeah.
It was definitely the Led Zeppelin 4 album cover. So she finds him by the riverside, and she takes him back to the convent,
the church might have
been a monastery.
Yeah, probably. And they're trying to, like, exorcise the demon or the evil that's, you know, just taken him. And he's like, no, like, he's, you know, he's on his way for Ellen. They're like, no, he can't leave here. Like, his darkness. He's like, dude, he's on his way right now. Like, he's on a ship.
But they're like, it's holy ground. Don't you want to stay? Like, he can't come here. It's holy ground. He's like, oh, no. But, you know, he's got to go.
Yeah.
You know, you cannot persuade him to stay. So he grabs the closest horse and he rides away.
Yes.
And then ushers
him. He's sick too.
Oh, yeah. He's still messed up from everything that happened.
Yeah. And then we can finally get to Orlok being in a crate on a ship, you know, taken to Germany. And that's when the plague starts on the ship. You know, there's tons of rats. Everybody's getting sick and dying. And he's eating. Like, ate, like, two of the people on board.
Yeah, he ate the youngest ones, too.
Yeah.
I mean, the little tasty kids.
Yeah, little the tender kids.
Little,
you know?
Fun-sized
the
kids.
The veal kids.
Yeah.
The mwah kids. I'll have to cut that out. No,
the suckling pigs.
Yeah, so he eats them. And finally, they're trying to, they're slowly chipping away back at, and you know, with Ellen and all the professor and the doctor and all that. They finally are starting to have some breakthroughs. They find out that, you know, that Nock is the one who sent him, you know, to Count Orlok, and, you know, that he's
missing for some reason. He's in the wind.
Yeah. And so they find out that he's been locked up because he was mad. He went to a
Christmas market and ate three sheep and,
killed him with his bare hands and started eating.
Killed him with bare hands. Yeah. And ate them raw. So
they locked him up, and Willem Dafoe's character, the professor, he's like, you know, how come you didn't tell me that he was, you know, here? Well, he escaped. You know, he's gone now.
Yeah, because now he's basically gone rogue agent. He was locked underground in the bottom of the prison where due to the fact that now we deal with science, we don't deal with, you know, afflictions of demonology.
Like, yeah.
There's no demonic possession. So we don't use the basement anymore.
Yeah.
The doctor was kind of like, wow, that's, you know, you're talking, you know, ancient archaic practices.
Yeah.
So they wanted to know why they put him down there. So they said that basically we put Nock down there because he ate the three sheep.
Yeah.
at the Christmas market. And so they go down and They have him chained up in this chair. It looks like an electric chair, but obviously there was no electricity.
Yeah.
So there's nothing. It's just basically holding him in place.
They just wait outside for lightning to strike.
Yeah. And so he's sitting there, and he, of course, like in mad, you know, like the typical portrayals of Renfield, he's calling out to the night, talking to, you know, Nosferatu, and...
You know, pledging, you know...
Yeah, pledging his eternal undying allegiance.
Yeah.
And so he... Apparently, the guards become disturbed, so they go downstairs because he's knocked himself over.
Yeah.
And they go down to basically try and assist him in getting back up. Dumb idea, because he reaches in, grabs, bites the person.
Yeah, bites his neck.
Killing them,
yeah.
And then obviously gets the keys from them and escapes into the night. Yeah. So.
And so now the professor and... the doctor has to try to find him, but instead they just go into his prison cell and they find out that, yeah, he's part of the occult, that he is the one who lured him, set up the whole deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so now it's just finding Orlok now. And finally, the ship crashes into the harbor pretty much.
And wouldn't you know that the best friend is a shipping magnate? So he owns all the docks and everything. So the ship comes forth on his dock. So the police show up at his door with a tap, a tap, a tap. You need to come on down here to your job because something weird just happened.
Yep.
So they usher him down to the docks, and lo and behold, there's a plague ship crashed upon his jetty, and there's just rats flooding.
Just everywhere. They're just pouring off the ship, man. And it's like, yeah, it's a plague ship. And now shit has hit the fan.
Yeah. The Black Plague has now gone into, I forget the name of the village. It's like Vizy or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
I wanted to almost say Wiesbaden, because that's a city in Germany where my son was born, but it's not Wiesbaden. It was like Vizy or something like that. And yeah, lo and behold, the plague has come to Vizy.
So now people are getting sick, dying on the streets. The hospitals are getting overflown. It was like the first COVID, pretty much. And so now...
There's priests walking around painting white crosses on doors.
You need to repent or you're going to die. Just exactly. Times never change, man. People don't change. Yeah, no. Times change, but the people don't.
Same crap, different week.
Yeah. So anyway, there's all that going on. Just chaos, hysteria, pretty much. And...
And right at that scene, remember, as night falls, you see the canal in the middle of the city and knocked on the little, basically...
rowboat, pretty much.
It's a rowboat. It's kind of like those little boats in Italy. And he's going right down the strait with the coffin, the sarcophagus, on the actual ship headed towards... the estate that Orlok had purchased.
Yeah. And which is neighboring Thomas,
Thomas
and Ellen's,
and Ellen's
house.
House, yes.
And so, so that's going down. And finally Ellen's like, well, I'm going to go stay with, sleep with, my girlfriend pretty much while they're up and doing their thing, trying to figure all this stuff out, especially with the plague going around. So they're sleeping, she has another nightmare, and she actually comes face-to-face with Count Orlok, finally, in her dreams. And pretty much him saying that, that you belong to me, so this is what's going to happen. Like, you're going to submit to me, this is how it's going to go down, and you're going to be with me forever, and that's it. And she rejects him, and he gets pissed off, slams her to the ground, and tells her that she has three nights, counting that night, she has two more nights now, to pretty much submit to her people that she loves are going to die. And she's like, no, you're not going to do anything. Well, when she wakes up from her dream, she hears sounds like moaning on the floor. When she looks over, it's her friend being eaten by rats. Or being nibbled by rats. And her friend catches the plague. And so that's unfortunate. So now she knows that, this dude is...
He means business. Yeah, he's standing on business.
He's not screwing around. This dude, he wants me. And so now they have to try to figure out what's going, what to do next, pretty much. And the husband of the woman who is now sick you know, doesn't want them there anymore because, you know, the...
Well, before that, remember, Jonathan appears back on the scene.
Oh, yeah, that's
Jonathan
right.
Jonathan
yeah.
via horseback pretty much at the same time that Orlok...
Thomas. Yeah.
...is being ushered back in. Thomas appears on horseback in front of the house. And so the happy couple are back together.
Again. Yeah, and he pretty much is confirming, like, hey, like, she's telling the truth. Like, there is some dark stuff going on out there. And I experienced it. I was, you know, I was sucked off by this guy.
It was like I had to jump out of a window. And
which I forgot about that part, too, is when Orlok is eating Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
Not eating him, but sucking his blood.
And the crazy part is, like, what I really liked about this movie is they're not being all goofball about it, going for the neck. Like,
the heart.
Dude,
yeah.
It's over the heart. It's over, like, the source of the blood, which was, like, that's great.
Yeah,
I've never seen another movie really go at it like that.
Yeah, and so that was done really, really well.
Yeah.
But anyways, back to this, he's pretty much confirming that, yeah, that she was right, that there are dark forces out there, and they're on their way for Ellen. And so now they have to try to figure out, you know, how to stop this force again, like, you know, that they've been doing.
But they get evicted.
Because she's just causing too much trouble. Like,
yeah.
It's just too much.
He's a skeptic. He's a businessman. His family is now in peril. He hasn't slept in like 5 or 6 days. Your mind kind of starts to slip on you. And so he's like, you know what? My life was like normal before you came along.
Yeah.
So you got to get the hell a step.
Yeah, because you got to figure out, you know, that's the plague going on. We got to quarantine. Like,
yeah. We're dealing with real scientific stuff here. We're dealing with an actual physical plague.
Yeah.
And you guys keep talking about, like, you know, magic, you know, Lucky Charm demon things coming. Like, I don't believe this crap, so just go.
And so that night, while he's asleep with a gun in his hand, because I feel like he does believe, but he doesn't want to, because he sleeps with a gun. And that's when Count Orlok comes in, but makes sure that he doesn't wake up, puts a spell over him so he stays asleep. And there's a commotion going on in his daughter's rooms. And the wife gets up and finds Count Orlok feasting on the children. And then finally gets the wife.
Yes.
And they have to bury all three of them.
Yes. The next morning, essentially, he's standing out and he's finally being affirmed. He's finally believing now because his whole family just died in front of him.
Yeah. So even though he was asleep the whole time, he was, yeah.
Yeah.
And so Thomas and Ellen actually go to the funeral, and he's like, no, you need to leave. You brought this plague here. So now he does believe, like you said, and he's like, no, like, you need to leave. The nerve of you to show up here after you brought this plague amongst us. And yeah, it's just a whole thing. But they calm him down, and they finally talk about the plan to finally find him, you know, because he has to return to the place that he was, you know, that he rests, you know, the dirt that he was born on, he has to return to it to rest at and during the day. So they're, you know, we got to find his coffin. We got to find it, destroy it, and then we'll destroy him. And so, but they realize, and so does Ellen, the professor and Ellen realize, like, that's not going to work.
They kind of sidebar because everybody's getting really amped up. They're like, yeah, you know, we'll get this AK-47 and we'll go up and we'll spike him right in the heart at like 3:13 p.m. And everybody's kind of like, and William Dafoe's character is like, you know, you're dealing as though you're dealing almost like with a human enemy.
Yeah, this is not a human.
This is not, you know, you know, garlic don't kill this guy.
Yeah.
Okay?
Speaking of garlic, I like that little touch in the very beginning, and I had to, you know, keep going back to, but I'm remembering stuff from the movie, is that when he goes to the inn, that lady is putting garlic on the windows to deter the vampires. I'm like, dude, that's a nice little touch. Like, yeah. Anyway, sorry, back to
you know, they're planning on coming at this as though, like, it's a physical entity, and... You know, William Dafoe kind of takes her aside and is like, hey, Ellen, listen, he's coming for you.
Yeah.
You are, like, the person who's able to deal with this.
Yeah.
Like, she has, like, the gift.
Yeah, and she agrees.
She already knew this in her heart of hearts, that this is how it had to go down.
Yeah.
That she was what brought him into this world, and she was what was going to have to take him out.
Yeah, because when she was younger, she...
She invited him in. Yeah. She was an empath, and she was, you know, she was a forest baby.
Yeah.
So she had like those connections to the earth, and she, looking for friends, pledged her undying love unto the constellations, whatever constellation it may be, and that hence opened a door that allowed, you know, Nosferatu to come through.
Yeah.
And so he came to her when she was but a child, a virgin.
Yeah.
And came to her, and that was the reason that the city had not, you know, befallen unto the plague before.
Yeah.
Was because the pact that Nosferatu had made with her as a child in the forest had basically preserved everything. That's why now, essentially, due to the fact that she is in love with Jonathan, or it wasn't Thomas in this movie. So, due to the fact that she's in love with Thomas and she is now, you know, betrothed unto Thomas, all hell is going to break loose.
Yeah.
Orlok is pulling out all the stops. So, it's determined, obviously, that they're going to make a side plan that...
to find the sarcophagus.
They're going to find the...
but use Thomas and the doctor.
They're going to use Thomas and the doctor as kind of like a side quest to keep them occupied so that Ellen can do the actual work that needs to be done.
Yeah. And so they do. They go on this little mission, and they go to his estate, and they find the sarcophagus. And when they quickly open it and
run. Once again, amazingly done.
Yes,
the sheer amount of effing rats in this place was just. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like bodies on the floor, and you can't even see like the shallowed husk of victims because the rats.
There's so many rats. Yeah. And so they find the sarcophagus, and they pop it open real quickly, and they jam the stake through the heart of not Orlok, but his little minion, Nock. And
see, once again, this is where I think that was great character development, because literally, like, they made him a real character because he had in kind of like a non-substantial point in the movie, Orlok is betraying the bond that he made with Nock.
Yeah.
Betraying the pact that he had made with him. And so he is denouncing him that he will not be the Rat King.
Yeah.
So now, of course, Nocked, you know, knowing that he's on his way out, he just got staked. He starts spilling all the beans. He's like, I was to be the Rat King. I was to be this. Like, I was to have honor and everything. So kind of like, haha, you've been fooled. Like, you didn't really take out the master. You took out, you know, the servant.
Yeah, and the professor just gets upset and just slams it straight through him.
He's just like, now you're done. You know, you're talking trash while I'm trying to kill you and boss on you. You're done. And then, of course, he proceeds to burn the whole place down.
Because, he needs to destroy his place that he rests. And back where Ellen's at, finally Count Orlok comes in and she's like, I submit to you. And so
she was the bait that pulled him out.
And so he goes and he kind of with a sexual undertone pretty much that it's her giving her, you know, herself to him. And so she's lying there naked and he finally starts sucking her blood over her heart. And because of Orlok's kind of obsession with her and how he can't just pretty much control himself, he feeds too long. Yeah, he feeds too long. And unfortunately, fortunately for everybody else, but unfortunately for him, he stays too long and, you know, he dries up with the sunset or with the sunrise.
Dries up. Okay. So this was not your standard, hey, this dude turns to dust. This was not Blade.
This was not like 30 Days a Night. No. This was not like.
This was not, you know, Ash or Cinder or whatever kind of stuff, or, you know, Underworld.
Yeah.
This was not UV light hit you, boo, you know, your dust. No, this was done extremely well.
Yes.
I mean, in the fact of like, so obviously it was a sexual encounter. So he, of course, is on top of her. She is beneath him. But then as he like literally realizes that the sun is coming in and he's, you know, it's starting to kill him.
She pulls him back in.
She grabs him, like, by the head almost lovingly and, like, makes eye contact.
Yeah.
Like you do, like, you know, like, with a first kiss.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no, hey, like, it's okay, but, yeah, no, you're gonna die. Like,
yeah. And so he finally, when the sun is finally completely risen, he dies. Like, he screams, he throws up the blood that he had in his mouth, and he finally perishes. He just dries up. and is just a husk now of just nothing, and falls on top of her. And so Thomas, realizing that his mission was just a diversion for him, so he wouldn't interfere with what was going to go on, he finally runs back and finds Ellen and Count Orlok dead, unfortunately. And Professor asks him for forgiveness, but he just keeps on quoting, you know, the story of the occult, that, you know, the passage of Nosferatu and what happened, and the woman who kind of sacrificed herself so that way the plague could stop in the village. And so it was over. And I guess happily for everybody else, but for Thomas, unfortunately, it was a sad ending for him. But the movie in general was just done really, really well. I mean, to take this character, you know, that's back in the 20s. And
yeah, the first one came out in 22.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, just to do it the way that he did it was amazingly. I mean, because he could have easily just taken the same character. I mean, obviously it's the same story because it's based off of Bram Stoker's Dracula, but the design of the character, to go the route that they did with him, I mean, it was just done great. And the storyline too, adding to the storyline too, and also taking from the book as well. I mean, it was done great. I mean, I don't know how you could talk. I left it speechless. I was like, dude, this, I don't even know what to say. How
I'm going
to
talk about this. I was taking it back through the whole thing. I was just sitting there watching it, and I was like, from the moment it starts, and a lot of people got like kind of, a lot of people got really critical of this, but there were a couple jump scares in there, and I don't get, like, I'm not jump scare susceptible, but like that first one, this movie like picks you up from the beginning.
Yeah,
like her dreams and her recanting what is going on, from like the minute that the movie starts, it carries you through the whole movie.
Yeah.
And there were some good, I mean, like that first jump scare, it got me because I was not expecting that. Because I was, you know, I was going into it thinking it's going to be very similar to the first Nosferatu. Or perhaps Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula that came out in 92.
Yeah.
I was thinking that, you know, I was going to approach it like that. But no, it really got to the point where, you know, there's some good shadow play in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really think, I mean, the Davy Jones thing, the accent thing that we've already discussed, that kind of got to me, that I kind of felt kind of, you know, odd about. But beyond that, just the pure character development.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that, I mean, I'm not one of those people who gets like, there's a lot of people who get like uber starstruck and they're like, this person was in this movie, this actress was in this movie, and she's stunning and she's breathtaking. I'm not that person. I'm not that guy. But I can tell you, like, for a fact, just the way that she was portrayed, just her natural beauty in this movie, she is like a Gustav Klimt. We were talking about this earlier. She is like a Gustav Klimt painting in this entire movie. Like, it's just this timeless beauty, and she played the part amazingly.
Yeah.
Skarsgård was amazing. And the fact, like I said, that they really came through and they developed some of these secondary characters.
Oh, yeah, dude,
Because I really expected a huge development on Defoe's part. I really expected, you know, them to really get into that and deep dive into him. And it wasn't. It was very elusive. It was kind of like, oh, well, here's this recluse living with cats.
Yeah.
You know, who's been exiled from the scientific community for, you know, being an occultist. So, but even in that, he was almost third fiddle to some of the other characters that were in the movie. And I'm like, that's great, because he has such a diversity that he could play a part like that.
Oh, yeah, dude, definitely.
And pull it off. So, I mean, I would highly recommend this movie. Artistically, top freaking shelf in my book.
Yeah. Like what was good about it, especially with the writing, is every character mattered.
Yeah.
You know, from the small parts, from even the little girls. You know, because they get eaten, and it shows.
The little girls, before they get eaten, they're referencing from the first moment that you see them, they're talking to their dad. And this is before Orlok's on the scene official.
Oh, yeah.
He's not really visiting them, but they're saying that there's a monster that lives in their room. And the monster comes out after they're asleep And the dad's just like, oh, yes, ha, ha, ha. Yeah, well, there's no monsters, you know. And that's before, you know.
Anything happens,
that's
yeah.
before Thomas has even left.
Yeah.
For the Carpathians. It's like his going away party.
Yeah.
So, I like you said, I really like the way that they pulled all that into play.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because every character mattered, man. The writing was done really, really well. I mean, there's some movies where they have characters and, you know, you could take them out of the movie and the movie would probably still, the plot would still go the same way, where this one, you took out a piece of any of these characters and probably wouldn't feel the same. I mean, obviously you need these characters. So yeah, the writing was done really well. The cinematography, everything was done really, really well. The creating the atmosphere, it was done good. It was just 10 out of 10. Yeah. Like you said, it was just amazing.
Yeah. I'd give it a 9 out of 10 because, you know,
nobody's perfect.
Yeah. You know, nobody's perfect, but then, you know, there's also, you know, what we've already stated, but, I mean, hopefully you're listening to this. You want to go see the movie. Let us know what you think, obviously.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hit us up in the comments.
Follow us on Instagram at Podcast Petrified. The link will be in the description of this episode. And we hope – oh, yeah, by the way, we hope everybody had a great Christmas.
Yes,
well.
Exactly. It is Christmas. We want to, you know, yeah. hope you had a great time with your family.
Yeah, hope you had, you know, whatever holiday you celebrate, Hanukkah, whatever it may be, hope you –
yeah,
you
know. Actually, it's the sun's going down out here in West Texas right now. So, you know, a blessed Hanukkah to – all our Hebrew brothers and sisters.
Yeah, and we hope everybody's had a good time. Happy holidays to everyone. And thank you so much for listening to the Petrified Podcast. And we'll see you next week.